Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, new Winkworth research on what's going on in London's most expensive postcodes ahead of the budget. In this episode, we're taking a close look at PCL Prime Central London. New Winkworth research reveals what's really happening in this area, which is once more rumoured to be the target of budget tax rises. Or at least that's what the headlines have told us in recent weeks. The effect has been to slow the market in the PCL neighbourhoods, Belgravia, Chelsea, Kensington, Hampstead and Mayfair. But as the Winkworth research shows, there's still lots going on in these locations. Serious buyers are acting quickly, especially when the price of a property is right. One and two bedroom flats are particularly popular. The market's not being driven by investors, as was the case until quite recently, but more by domestic buyers looking for a home. There's also lots of demand for rental properties, so long as they're nicely presented. To find out more about the facts behind the headlines and also to talk about those budget rumours, I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agge, CEO of Winkworth, and by Josh Grinling of Winkworth Kensington. Dominic and Josh, thanks for joining us. First to you, Dom. Now, let's take a look at this Winkworth research. It tells us that Prime Central London isn't a no-go zone for buyers and renters. Can you give us some more detail about conditions in this market, which has always been unlike other markets in the capital or anywhere else for that matter?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it is mixed. I mean, it has changed an awful lot over the last 10 years, or really since 2014, and the makeup of it's changed. So perhaps it is more like the rest of the UK than it ever has been. I think what you found is led by, you know, the domestic buyer now, and the sort of investment element that was there that sort of drove the rapid price increases sort of up to in the noughties and up to 2014 have waned as a result of kind of increased stamp duty and various political measures. So what you're seeing now is it is people that are there to come to work and build their careers in London.
So the focus on overseas buyers is wrong. The people that want to settle in Prime Central London are domestic buyers looking to find a home who are seeing value at present.
I suppose that's not totally true. I mean, there is a large part of international buyers, but those are often people who are basing themselves in the UK for work. So perhaps it's not the safety deposit box of old as a global asset that people felt they just had to buy to park their funds in. London is a city that appeals globally as a sort of financial centre and a place to build very successful careers, and it does draw in international buyers to come and buy properties. But more and more so, you know, that is on a needs-based basis rather than a sort of speculation basis. So people are here to work and buy a flat or a house that they need to live in with their families.
So we always used to talk about the north-south divide, with the markets everywhere else being very different from London. They're now drawing closer together.
Yeah, I think what you've seen in the property market generally is this kind of removal of speculation. That means that, you know, it's behaving in a transactions have reduced over the years, and so it's behaving in line with people's needs. And I think what you'll see with Central London is that it will fare in line with the success of London going forward. And I think that's about, you know, the big policies that are made by the government of the day. I mean, the big changes were the stamp duty in 2014, which made it very expensive to buy these central London properties. And then Brexit also had a very damaging impact because of the sentiment it gave out about London being open for these high net worth individuals. And currently, you know, we are in a bit of a flux because, you know, we have this statement just around the corner and, you know, there has been lots of kite flying about what could be in that and the pursuit of the wealthy. And whilst my personal belief is that, you know, these things always end up slightly less dramatic, it's a bit like an election, they're always slightly less dramatic than advertised, you know, it does cause damage to sentiment. So I think what you're seeing at the moment is those that might be in the line of fire for any taxes aimed at the sort of high net worth individuals are pausing activity. So the mix of activity in central London has been driven by the sort of one and two bed flats where people are less concerned about some of the articles that are printing sort of speculation around taxes being considered on the wealthy.
So what are the key points coming out of this research?
I think the key points is that the activity is in the sort of one and two bedroom flats. So sort of 50% of properties that were exchanging in Q3 were two-bed flats. So that's where, you know, the business has been done, and that's because of the kind of sentiment carries on. It's people looking to build their careers and about London as an international centre and job creation, rather than perhaps the speculation of taxation coming in the autumn statement. It also shows that when you look at it in the round, that actually the picture is broadly more positive than last year. I mean, I think you're looking at the amount of sales being agreed in total volume higher than Q3 and people registering to buy properties, 10% more people registering to buy properties in prime central London than there were in Q3 last year. So far from perhaps some of the negativity that's out there, but clearly it is a divided market where, you know, you look at the sort of larger houses and they are on pause as we come towards the autumn statement.
What we're seeing then is a reversal of the trend of recent years where nobody really much wanted a flat. They were looking for a big fancy family house. Now those flats are once more coming to the fore.
I think so. I think that's across the board, actually, in central London and outside. I think you're seeing that the trend has always been that there have been these trophy houses that never come available in these sort of wonderful streets in every area. There's a section which is, sort of has these and there are queues of buyers and snapped up. And of late, you know, the last year or so or two, there are more of those available than there've ever been. And there aren't the queue of buyers to snap them up. People have sort of reined in that purchase and perhaps going for slightly the less luxury option as budgets have been constrained. That's sort of a general picture across the board. In central London, clearly, there's also this other element, which is, you know, non-dom taxation changes, etc., and government policy that is causing a bit of a pause at that part of the market. And our man here, Josh, will be able to talk to us in depth about Kensington and the actual sort of micro markets going on in there in those famous streets.
Your Notting Hill colleague, Charles, has often said that one of the main groups of buyers of these flats are the grandparents of American families who've settled here, who are going to make their lives here, who want to be nearer their grandchildren. Are Americans forming a big portion of the people who are buying in London now?
They've always been, especially in Notting Hill, it's sort of been a very much American second home, really, after the film. It's amazing how that worked. But no, Notting Hill is very, very related to the American market. But yes, there are lots of. I mean, you see it in the Cotswolds these days, not only central London. So there is a demand from American high net worth individuals. There's also, you know, demand from the Middle East, as there always has been, and from the Asian markets. I think what the UK potentially has is that it has the opportunity to set itself up as an alternate to US investment. I mean, there is clearly a lot of uncertainty in the US, and for those that would be investing there who may not align themselves with the beliefs of Donald Trump, then the UK could represent a very popular place to put one's money.
So you'd be urging the Chancellor in the budget not to introduce a mansion tax?
Yeah, I think it's very well taxed already, that part of the market. You know, the stamp duty is very heavy. People are paying lots of money to buy their properties in central London. And only recently, you know, there was an additional 2% added to the additional 3%. So a 5% additional fee for a second home buyer. And then there's a 2% additional fee for an overseas buyer. So it's a 7% additional stamp duty on purchase already. So it feels like there's a lot of taxation, and perhaps you know, how much does that really move the dial for the UK economy and the issues it's got of the day? Does it really help, or are we just pushing out a bad sentiment for the international community about the state of London?
What's your feeling about higher rates of council tax on more expensive properties?
So I suppose, as I say, I think that's probably the least bad option, is my view. It depends, obviously, what number they put on it. I believe that may be where we end up, because again, it's sort of one of the ones where you know they push out the sort of worst case scenarios and come back with one that everyone feels is, oh, that's not so bad. But so, you know, it's a very outdated system in terms of valuation. I think it's a nightmare to revalue those properties where no one's done it before. I think the sort of idea is perhaps they'll just keep the current bands and increase the cost at the current bands, which would probably be workable. And so long as it doesn't suddenly become huge percentages, then perhaps that is the most palatable way forward. But again, you know, it's at that band, you know, is it really, you know, are we really moving the dial by targeting the wealthy, or does it need to be a kind of broader approach to raise the money needed for the UK? And I think it is important, you know, we have this opportunity to set London, central London, up as, you know, a very popular destination for high net worth individuals to invest and create industry. And we want to, and you know, the Labour government are making those noises that they want that. You know, they want to investment, they want to realign with Europe, and they want to do trade deals with India. So hopefully they won't defeat themselves.
When we were chatting earlier, you were talking about some other moves that government was taking, which you saw as more positive and possibly beneficial for the market.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are some other stories in there which I think would be very interesting. I mean, there is talk about more radical reform. I mean, one's always sceptical that radical reform comes to bear, but clearly, you know, getting rid of stamp duty, replacing it with an annual taxation would be a very interesting concept. I mean, in theory, you know, if you were buying, it would increase the amount of transactions, amount of time. People would move more often. And moving more often is a good thing for social mobility. It's a good thing for the economy. It's a good thing for the period of central London. So I think anything that targets the kind of dead money of the transaction tax, the stamp duty, would be welcome. And I think from an international point of view, yeah, if they can reform property taxes and make them more sensible, then that would be a great boost for London.
If Rachel Reeves is listening to this, the message she needs to send out is London is open for business.
I think that's what they're trying to say, isn't it? I mean, that's everything they're saying. We're gonna go out there and we're gonna get growth. We're gonna make it investable. We're gonna have summits for AI. We're gonna get you know, align ourselves with trade deals. We're doing what others couldn't have done. So why go against that, really? Because I think we need it to sort of generate the growth that, you know, helps us all pay for our public services.
Thank you for your positivity. Over to you now, Josh. Now, your particular part of Prime Central London is Kensington. Kensington has gorgeous museums, lovely white stuccoed houses around garden squares, and some of the loveliest shops. But for those who don't know exactly where it is, can you tell us where your area starts and finishes with the main landmarks along the way? Just take us on a tour.
Right. Kensington is situated to the west of central London and is obviously part of Kensington Chelsea. Simply put, Kensington is postal code W8. My patch covers from the south, Cromwell Road, going north to Notting Hill Gate. My easterly border is Kensington Palace, which is unlikely to come onto the market. And to the west is Olympia and the border of Hammersmith and Fulham.
Kensington Palace. Now, that would be a trophy home. Cromwell Road, the museums.
Yes.
And so going north towards Notting Hill, those gorgeous garden squares.
Exactly.
Are you either a Kensington person or a Chelsea person?
Very much so. There's a very distinct difference between Chelsea and Kensington. Kensington is a classic urban village. There's all these stories about certain parts of prime central London being, you know, completely dark at night with no lights on and so on. But our area really has a community feel. People know their neighbours. There are residents' associations. There are lots of events that people organise. It's a really very jolly, pleasant place to live.
We really want to live there, I think.
I would, yeah. I advise it for a living.
The market just now What's the mood? Is it just miserable, stagnant, or actually more cheerful than you'd think?
Well, Dom touched on this. I mean, really, things started... It was all boom up until 2014. Even the banking crisis of 2008-09 was intense but brief because the property prices went down, the pound went down, foreign investment came in, and we were back on a roll with seeing property price inflation on a price per square foot basis. 2014, George Osborne stands up on 1st of December and decides to put punitive stamp duty on prime central London houses predominantly. So that has obviously not helped. It's, as Dom has pointed out again, that there have been further increases, particularly on overseas buyers. And as Dom says, you know, I thought inward investment was a good thing. So it has been disappointingly unstable since 2014. We've had Brexit, which again, Dom mentioned, but that's a lot of people that were very keen on living in London for lots of reasons who have had to change their minds and move home. So we have a smaller demand. It's a simple conclusion of that.
The Winkworth research, though, shows that one and two bedroom flats are selling very well. You've got some great mansion blocks on your patch. What's the demand for those places?
We do. And indeed, we've had a lot of sales in one and two bedroom flats in mansion blocks in Kensington. There are provisos to that, though. Some of the larger family apartments, four, five, six bedroom apartments, are more difficult to sell at the moment. But another bright area is £2 to £3 million houses. There's a very sweet area called Hillgate Village right near me, and we do quite a lot of business there. And they're still very much in demand. And in fact, although we have seen genteel but continuous deflation since 2014, some areas like Hillgate Village have held up very strongly, in fact, and there's very little difference.
And that's even though those properties, those smaller, would still be considered mansions if the government brings in a mansion tax.
Well, that's the irony. It's very much where the government decides to put the bar. If it was half a million, it would include studio flats in my area. So ultimately, it very much depends how they define. I mean, also, I don't know how they're going to value all these houses. If it's 2 million, you know, most people are going to have valued their houses at 1.999, I'd imagine.
A lot of people listening to this will be thinking, a nice mansion flat somewhere in Kensington, that would be a great pied-à-terre. What kind of money would you be looking at?
Well, that's, again, differs enormously within one small area. But you'd be looking at £500,000 plus for a one-bedroom, £750 plus for a two-bedroom. But these could be, you could pay £1.5 million for a one-bedroom flat very easily.
These are substantial properties, though, aren't they? They're not pokey new-build flats.
I mean, I've sold one recently for £1.25 million and it was 640 square feet. So not really, no. You can, if for a very delightful first floor, which has been interior designed, you'd be looking at up to £2,000 a square foot. That's the size of a waste paper basket. That's quite expensive, frankly.
A lot of people also listening to this that will be thinking, time to snap up a property in Kensington. Now, Palace Gardens Terrace, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous road. It runs down from Notting Hill, gorgeous white stucco houses down towards the lovely shops of Kensington High Street. Is this the time to snap up a place on there?
Well, you're right. It is very beautiful. I do remember I was walking down Brunswick Gardens, the sister street to Palace Gardens Terrace, and I could see through the azure sky the St Mary Abbot spire, and the cherry trees were out and all the blossom was out and the white stucco fronted houses were gleaming. And I said, if there is a heaven, this might be what it looks like. And so I don't want to sell the area too hard. That does sound a bit creepy. You know what I mean? It is about as close to urban nirvana as you can get. So, yes, it is a little bit cheaper than it has been. These very sought-after streets do hold up reasonably well. That example of a first-floor flat I sold not so long ago, it's about the same price as you would have got a few years ago, despite the deflationary pressures, because they're just still quite rare. People hang on to these things because they know they are gems.
So no houses on that road are coming up for sale?
Well, interestingly, after the change in non-dom status, rather amazingly, where you, if you're lucky, get one or two a year, suddenly six came on the market as non-dom residents, I presume, hurtled towards Monaco, Liechtenstein and other tax-efficient areas. So, yes, there is some stock available, but a lot of people, overseas buyers, decided to rent them out. so they could ride the storm somewhere else and then come back home. So in fairness, they're not all hurtling for the border.
Again, let's put some numbers on that. What would be the price to buy one of these places?
Well, a house, I suppose between 7 and 10 million is the average, although it looks a uniform terrace. There's probably about eight types of architecture there. Some are six stories high, some are four, some are wide, some are not so wide. But 7 to 10 million pounds is the general.
But all are lovely. Now, yes. A lot of people would think, that's quite a lot of money. Why don't I rent instead? What kind of rent would you expect to pay?
Well, we rented one not so long ago for about £6,500 a week.
So you can rent for quite a long time and miss out on that stamp duty bill.
Yes, but you could also just be giving money away to a landlord rather than investing it.
Landlords at all interested in your area in acquiring anything, or are they just all gone away?
It's a bit tricky because obviously you can get 4.5% in your deposit accounts. You know, you don't have to be economic wizard to do that. Whereas, of course, the yield would be less for property bought in W8 at the moment.
Well, thank you for your insights, Josh. I think a lot of people are listening to this and are dreaming of that urban village that is Kensington. But before we go, I've got a question for you both. First to you, Dominic. What could and should Rachel Reeves do in the budget to ensure a healthy market in prime central London for the good of residents and the economy?
Well, so the things that have caused most damage to it over the years have been the Osborne 2014 stamp duty and not everyone agreed, but obviously Brexit, the Brexit vote as well. So she is, I believe, realigning slightly with Europe to help relations there, which is very positive. But essentially the reform of property taxes to make them slightly less archaic and fairer, I think, would do wonders for the popularity of central London again.
Over to you, Josh.
Well, my answer isn't that dissimilar to Dom's. When I started many, many years ago as an estate agent in Kensington, stamp duty was 1% on everything and nobody even ever talked about it. It's now crippling movement and some people feel trapped, frankly. And I would say to Rachel, please just reduce stamp duty back to 1%. It'd probably make you more money because people will be moving left, right and centre.
Somebody should be doing some numbers on the benefits that could flow out to the wider economy.
Oh, well, quite. I mean, quite honestly, stamp duty receipts have been going down as taxes go up. There's that famous S graph where you tax too much at a certain point, you get less return in taxes. The government is squeezing the neck of the goose laying the golden egg. And I believe that we've gone beyond the point where they could make more money by putting taxes up. I think they'd make more money if they put taxes down. Well, it'll never go down to 1%, but they could rationalise it and make it less punitive and painful for ordinary human beings to be able to move house.
Well, the crazy thing is, I mean, they know this because obviously they did this coming out of COVID. So they know that to generate economic growth, if you reduce stamp duty, you will generate economic growth. And they did it for that reason. So it's a known thing. So it's sort of bizarre that the one doesn't recognise that as a way of generating growth because it's been proven, really. So yes, one has hopes, but not great ones, sadly.
It's just going to get a bit worse. Rachel's not on our side.
Rachel, I only hope you're listening to this. Well, that's just about it. Dominic and Josh, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Thanks for your insights. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.